quiero. Pero si un atardecer.
Welcome back to Guerrilla Radio on CFUV 101.9 FM, cfuv.uvic.ca on the interweb there. Behind me, of course, Buena Vista Social Club, the legendary Cuban performers. Well, Robert Wintner is an environmental defender, author, and he's the wildly successful entrepreneur behind Hawaii's Snorkel Bob's Reef Outfitter Company. He's also the engine behind the Snorkel Bob Foundation, whose many charitable projects help to bring an appreciation of the oceans and all its inhabitants to dumb ape-like humans like me and like most of us, ignorant of the workings of the planet's single most important biosphere. Some of Robert's book's titles include In a Sweet Magnolia Time, Toucan Whisper, Toucan Sing, The Modern Outlaws, and his latest is 1969 and Then Some. Snorkel Bob is also the author of several reef photography books. Just out is Reef Libre, an in-depth look at Cuban exceptionalism and the last best reefs in the world, that also has a companion DVD, Reef Libre, the movie. Welcome back to the program, Robert.
Aloha, Chris. It's good to be here.
And it's my pleasure to have you as well. Well, now, Robert, Americans' rapprochement with Cuba has been big news over here in the last few months. Now, do you welcome the prospect of greater travel and tourism and diving on Cuba's reefs, or is this something that we should be concerned about?
I do welcome it, Chris, and it's a double-edged sword, and I'll explain that briefly. A visit to Cuba offers great insight into the Cuban people. The thing that I observe the most, I'm proudest to be an American because we most successfully make fun of ourselves. I think Canadians enjoy the same wicked sense of humor. The only other place I've seen it is in Cuba. The Cubans are outspoken, they're intellectual, they have a great sense of humor, and they really want the embargo to end, and I'm all for it. They have a lot to offer the world of humanity socially. The other thing is the reef system. It is the last best system in the world, and the big question is what's going to happen after the Castros? And that question doesn't go away if the embargo is in place or the embargo is gone. The Cuban government has, since the Soviet collapse, been desperate for a viable economy. They've discovered tourism, reef tourism. It's the hottest destination in the world, at least one of. I think it could be the hottest. And so it remains to be seen if they're going to maintain their rigorous protection. You know, it's a communist government, so they claim to be above the yen for money and material gain, but they're not. They are humans, and they have things they want to do, like humans have. And so money is the key to that. So it's a big question that's on the table. We were compelled to go down there and get the photography and the video that we got so we'd have a moment in time in case too much progress comes to Cuba, and that's all we have left.
Yeah, that's interesting, Robert, because, you know, I went down to Cuba a couple of years ago myself and with a camera with this same sort of idea, although not to deal with the reefs. But I grew up in the Caribbean, in the Bahamas, which is definitely not communist, and I spent a lot of time skin diving as a kid. But my eyesight has gotten so poor now, I couldn't do it in Cuba. Now, I'm assuming, Robert, that you've been into the Bahamas diving on their reefs as well. How do they compare with those in Cuba?
It's difficult to generalize all of Bahamas. Bahamian reefs are some of my very favorites in the world because you have that mystical emerald green water. But the Bahamas, like the rest of the Caribbean, have suffered terrible pressure from the usual ailments affecting reefs around the world, mostly acidification and warming. And across the Bahamas, it's pretty widespread to have effluent and brown algae and so on. Cuba has been free of that. Their isolation has been difficult for them as a society, but if you look at the bright side, they have no development, no nothing. We looked at, you know, you have to figure that their infrastructure is non-existent and not repaired since 1959. And so you have to assume, let's say, that their sewage outflow is all direct drive.
Right.
Maybe they have the wherewithal to get it farther from the beach. Who knows? We can only speculate. But that's it. There's no industrial effluent. There's no nothing. From the room, from the balcony of the Copacabana Hotel, you could look out on what would be, in the land of the free, billions of dollars of prime waterfront commercial real estate. It's abandoned. It's empty. It's a ruins. It's a great thing because their reefs are pristine. We were very careful to take a baseline in Havana so that the jewel in the crown, which is really the highlight of this whole conversation, is a place called Jardines de la Reina, the Gardens of the Queen, 70 miles south of the Cuban coast, rising. It's a mangrove estuary in the middle of the Gulf of Ana Maria. Back to your question, how does it compare to the Bahamas? I think it would be about the same 30 or 40 years ago.
Right.
Today, it's wildly better, mainly because most reefs have been so impaired by these ailments. Human effects are one thing. Well, they're all human effects, but some of them are so big there's no small cure, like acidification or warming. That's not going to change in our lifetime. If we went to great efforts right now to change those things, it's like, you know, the old analogy of turning a giant ship. It takes a long time after you turn the wheel.
Oh, Robert, you sound a little fuzzy to me. Can you still hear me?
I can.
Okay, there you go. We've got gremlins in our phones today. Well, you know, you mentioned that, you know, money is a universal, even for the comrades of Cuba. When I was down there, I noticed a definite entrepreneurial spirit and even maybe a little bit of bourgeois envy there amongst some of the young entrepreneurs in the changing Cuba, especially where it comes to like bed and breakfasts and small restaurants and these kinds of mostly tourist-driven enterprises. And I wonder, though, having experienced tourism directly here in my hometown of Victoria, but also growing up in the Bahamas, you know, that the temptation to make tourist dollars might endanger the fish and shells of these reefs. What kind of protections does Cuba offer to these organisms and structures?
I think it's going to come down to values, down to street level. And this is what makes it such a daunting challenge. There was a fellow who was managing the reefs at Cayo Largo. It's another resort community. It doesn't have nearly the demographic draw of Jardines. Jardines is $5,000 per person to stay on board for a week.
Wow.
Cayo Largo is much less. The draw at Cayo Largo is an all-you-can-eat buffet, and I think all-you-can-eat speaks for itself. That's who you get, the all-you-can-eat crowd. And the manager at Cayo Largo was at Jardines for a long time. He's a committed waterman and reef dog, I call him. And I said to him, after the Castros, what's going to protect these reefs? And he said, we will protect them. It's what we do. I said, it's what you do now, but let me give you an example. If this was Hawaii and I was a developer, I'd come in and I'd say, look, I have a proposition for you. I'm going to build 1,200 condominiums. They're going to be very expensive, and when I'm done, and we're going to have jobs for the people and prosperity for everyone, and when we're all done, not only will these reefs be unharmed, they'll even be better than they are now. And he chewed on that for about 4 seconds, and my friend Fausto Denevi, he says, that will not happen here, what you suggest. And I said, why not? He said, because we won't let it happen. We will fight. We know how to fight. And I said, well, we'll fight alongside you because we're in this together. But I tell you, the challenge will come to Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, with a few minutes of contemplation, he realized that is correct. That is the case. So what are you going to do? Enjoy and value the goose while it lays its golden egg every day? Or are you going to try to kill it and get all the golden eggs at once? Remains to be seen in Cuba. It really does. And so, you know, I heard one good idea that could really help secure Jardines de la Reina, and that is World Heritage Site classification. That would pretty much do the trick, I think. I have, in fact, humbly sent a request to President Barack Obama to that effect. Will he read it? I don't know. But he might. We'll send him a copy of the book with that request in it, and you never know. Little seeds get planted.
Well,
I just think that... Sorry?
No, go ahead, Robert.
I just think that it's going to be a matter of them having smart management, and so far they have. They stumbled onto this. You know, the Cuban people, I made reference to their sense of humor, and It's a bit cynical. They oftentimes laugh to keep from crying. One of the jokes in Cuban culture is fried butter. What is fried butter? Well, you take a wad of butter and you roll it in flour and you fry it, and then you call that a meal. Can it sustain life? Well, kind of, sort of. And it's what they eat. And they're hungry. And they'd rather have a nice seafood dinner. And so they're clamoring. Right now, there's no commercial fishing in Cuba. I'm a reef fanatic, and I love that. Will that remain after the Castros? And once they get a reasonable revenue stream going, I kind of doubt it. I hope it does stay protected. We just have to wait and see.
Yeah, well, as I was going to interject, my previous guest today, Darj Mall, he was talking about the World Heritage designated Olympic National Park on the peninsula just across from Victoria here, that the Navy is going to use as plans to, at least at this date, use as a testing ground on the island. Here we've got a UN biosphere zone that allows logging, and now contemplating allowing gold and copper mining to get inside. So, I mean, I'd like to think these designations are a guarantor of an environment, but I don't know if I really believe that. And I'm wondering, too, when you say, like, you know, developers will come in, maybe American developers from Miami or something, and say, I'll build these condos. What about the pressure, and how does your friend describe resisting if it's the government itself that says, well, hey, we can monetize some of this, maybe just a little bit, and I know the Cuban government has gotten into some of the hotel business over there as well. I mean, what's to say that they don't say, oh, well, we should develop it for our own bank books?
You know, nothing's to say anything, really. What's it like to be dirt poor and then get a little bit of money? What do you want? The first thing you want is a little bit more. Mm-hmm. The Cuban government has for a long time used an Italian company called Avalon to run and manage all their water-based tourism, which is mostly sport fishing and diving. They make all kinds of claims. When you go to Cuba and you gather information, you always doubt what you're told or what you found out. Is this true? And in my experience, it's mostly true. It's most often true. You have to give it a little time, or you have to cross-check to see if it's entirely true, which may be true everywhere. But Avalon says that all the fishing there is catch and release. They say they only use barbless hooks. I said, that's great. Can I see one, please? Take a picture. Okay, we'll get you one. And then 2 days later, I said, by the way, I never got, oh, well, all the hooks are out now on the boat. You know, long story short, they're not using barbless hooks.
Yeah.
Is that a deal killer? Well, no. So we're just going to have to wait and see. I don't know what's guaranteed with anything. Could there be a special dispensation to a World Heritage site? Oh, you bet. Will the Navy blow up anything it can get its hands on? The Navy is like a kid with a paintbrush, except it's not a can of paint, it's bombs. They not only destroy a ton of nice stuff, but they spend tons of money doing it. And now we have, you know, don't get me started on the Navy. I assume you're talking about the U.S. Navy.
Well, yeah, I am, yeah.
They're bombing, not doing anymore. They bombed the island of Kaulave, which is in view of the south shore of Maui, to smithereens, and now they have sonar testing. We had 1 year, 2 years ago, where the whales were jumping 3 and 4 times more frequently than usual. And all the people who don't really think about things said, whoa, isn't this exciting, whales? The sonar was driving them mad. One whale jumped up, straight up, right next to a small sailboat, and landed on top of it and sunk the boat. It's never happened in recorded history. And as far as the media and the Navy are concerned, it never happened anyway. It was one of those erased events.
Mm-hmm.
They catch a lot of pressure on sonar, and now they've cut back at least in proximity to land where humans can see them and complain. But I think they're accountable for quite a bit of destruction. that's just not necessary.
Well, and these tests are electromagnetic tests, and similar to the extra low frequency stuff that the Navy uses for their sonar and their long distance sonar that has such devastating effects, although not admitted on wildlife in the ocean. These things are going to have similar effects on land-based animals, and which of course humans are just one, but migratory birds especially. Where do we stand? I know there's a lot of problems for the reefs, and you mentioned some of them. You know, in the grand climate scale, but what is the situation in the world's reefs overall, and what is Snorkel Bob Foundation all about, and how are they and you trying to address some of these problems?
Our focus these days is to ban the aquarium trade in Hawaii. The aquarium trade, you know, people see glass tanks with colorful fish. You'll see it as a fixture in a movie scene, and you might not think about it. Or some people, without thinking about it, just assume that somebody somewhere is growing those fish. They're not. 98% of all fish kept by aquarium hobbyists are wild caught. And when you talk about what's happening in the world today as far as reefs, the biggest reef catastrophe in recorded history may be occurring this moment in the Atlantic, off the Atlantic seaboard and in the Caribbean and in Cuba with lionfish.
Right.
Lionfish have been demonized. There are more lionfish now in those waters, Atlantic seaboard and Caribbean, than all other species combined. I'm talking about the raw number of individuals. But the lionfish did not swim there. Lionfish were flown to South Florida and up and down the East Coast. The invasion began many years ago. It got accelerated with Hurricane Andrew when the Orlando Seaquarium took a hit and lost many of its fish, and the lionfish flowed into the Atlantic Ocean. Lionfish have no natural predators in the Atlantic. In the Pacific, sharks and other apex predators know to eat them, but in other waters, they don't. The Cubans came up with a pretty ingenious method. You know, in the Atlantic, they have these lionfish rodeo. It's another sunburn, beer-drinking kill fest. Let's scapegoat a species as evil. The Cubans figured that's not going to do any good because they breed so fast, but they started catching the lionfish. It's really a brutal exercise because they're beautiful animals, but they were de-spining them. They have long, toxic spines that sting like hell if they pierce your skin. And the sharks would go to eat them, get stung, and then say, I'm not supposed to eat that. The Cubans started despining lionfish and training certain sharks to eat them. And once the sharks got a taste for them, then they were willing to take the sting, and individuals would actually teach other individuals that this was a good thing to do.
Really? Well, see, now sharks are one of those demonized species as well, and they're really in trouble. I'm amazed to see that they're intelligent enough to teach each other.
Yeah, and, you know, to bring it back around, The big lesson, the big adventure, the big insight of Reef Libre, the book, was the shark lesson. It took a couple days to sink in. You know, when we first arrived at our first dive site, our leader Manuel said, "Okay, very nice site, not too many sharks." And we looked down, and there was a dorsal fin in the water. And we'd all seen that. We're a pretty macho group. And then there was another, and then six more. And he loves us. It's okay. Please, do not hesitate. Go straight to bottom. These sharks, they were only 10 or 12 feet long, but they were probably 4 or 5 feet thick. They were just enormously muscular. And long story short, we documented pretty well in the book, but to cut to the chase here, by day 2 or 3, we were casual. We were taking body checks and shoulder bumps with these big boys. And they were social animals. Do not mean to say that all sharks are cute as pups and just that friendly, because they're not. But I swear, it was such an eye-opener, and it opened our hearts to the shark encounter at Jardines. You know, we're often very careful to recommend a tourist destination. Tourism's been very good to me, but I know what it can do.
Yeah.
You find a magic place, and humanity descends upon it, the magic goes away. It happens every time.
Well, Robert, sorry to cut you off, Robert, but we're out of time. I just have to remind you, Reef Libre, an in-depth look at Cuban exceptionalism and the last best reefs in the world is Bob's a photo book. He's also got a companion DVD that goes with this, Reef Libre, the movie. You can go to snorkelbob.com, or where else can they find it, Bob? Robert?
At Amazon. Amazon or SnorkelBob both have it. And bookstores may have it, too.
Well, thanks a lot for coming on the show again, Robert, and all the great work you're doing to help our oceans, eh?
Thank you, Chris. Ahui ho, and I hope we can speak again soon.
All right, till the next time then. And I want to thank Dar Jamal and Janine Bancroft and all the good folks up here that keep things going week in and week out. Remind you to stay tuned for more of the excellent programming you get. Where else? Nowhere else. Just here. Till the next time. That's all I've got.
Y hasta creerás que te dirán te quiero, pero si un atardecer las gardenias de mi amor se mueren, es porque han adivinado que tu amor me ha traicionado. Porque existe otro querer.